Welcome to this teleseminar, 12 Stresses of Christmas and Other Holidays. My name is Tom Costello with the Healing Codes, and I'm pleased to be with you tonight. This gives us all a sense of how small the world is and how interconnected we are. And that's really, to me, fantastic. And it, in fact, is one of the underlying principles of the Healing Codes. So I'm going to get right into this, and let me just tell you how I envision the structure of this. I'm going to talk a whole lot, followed by you drawing a few diagrams on a piece of paper. Then I'm going to talk a whole lot. The Christmas holidays, and I'm talking about Christmas, I'm talking about Hanukkah, I'm talking about Kwanzaa, and I'm talking about other holidays that fall at this time of the year that I don't know about, I'm not familiar with, or are special to your part of the world. If those holidays, this time of the year, makes us happy and joyful, then those people are pretty fortunate. If, on the other hand, these holidays are loaded with stress or tension or fear, then the purpose of this call is to try to put that into a different perspective and maybe help shift it into something more empowering, more positive, more enlivening. When I refer to Christmas, you know, this is one of these politically correct statements. When I refer to Christmas, if you could hear Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and any other holiday that's important to you, that's really what I mean. If Christmas makes you happy, it's because of the way you think and feel about Christmas holidays. If it makes you unhappy, it's because of the way you think and feel about Christmas. In reality, Christmas doesn't make us do anything. It's our perceptions of these trigger things in our bodies. Stress is not really out there. It's in here. It's the way we think or feel or we believe. And so we're going to talk about some of those ways that we've been conditioned, we've been taught, we've developed on our own to think and feel and believe about this holiday season. Before I really get into this, I'd like to make a couple of suggestions. Here's one of them. Take a separate piece of paper and hold it off to the side, and this is where you can make a list of those triggers that I inevitably will come across. This is, if I say something, if I ask something, if I make a point, and you feel an indication of stress in your body, that is, your stomach tightens, you start grinding your teeth, you break out in sweat, or any other kind of physical sensation, make a note on that separate piece of paper, because this could give you a clue as to what's going on. Some underlying picture, interpretation, memory, cellular memory is there at the root of that, and you'll be in a position to go back after the fact and deal with that individually and make it go bye-bye. Now, I just want to say, my intention is not to annoy you, bother you, or distress you, but then there are some people that say I'm particularly good at it. So, if that's true, that's true. Here's your first chance to get stressed. I'm going to ask you to draw several different things. So are you stressing yet? Here's what I'd like you to do, is draw a 2-inch circle. Inside of that circle, draw about a 1-inch stick figure. It doesn't matter if it's 2.2 inches. It doesn't matter if it's a little less. It's generally somewhere in that area. A 2-inch circle with a 1-inch stick figure inside of that, in the center. Go down about 2 or 3 inches on your paper and draw what is something like a 5-inch horizontal line. Just a horizontal line across your paper. In the center, as if you were standing on that horizontal line, draw a stick figure. So now you've got a horizontal line with a little stick figure standing on it. On the left edge, put a little box, rectangular, square, doesn't matter, like 3/4 of an inch or something. Doesn't make any difference how big it is, just so you get the idea. On the far right end, near the end, not all the way to the end, put another box. So now you've got a horizontal line, a little stick figure standing on it in the center, and on either end, you've got a little box. Go down a couple of inches. Draw a circle about 1/2 inch, 3/4 of an inch in diameter. In the U.S., this would be about the size of a U.S. dime. That's not really that helpful to somebody in Australia. So I'll say 3/4 of an inch, but if you're using the metric system, that's probably not that helpful either. You're just going to have to put the stress of measurements on your sheet. So So now you've got a half-inch circle. Right below that, put circle that's about an inch in diameter. This would be something similar to a quarter in the U.S. It's larger than the first one, obviously. Doesn't make any difference how big it is relative, as long as it is bigger than. And just below that, you're going to draw a third circle that is bigger still. This would be about the American silver dollar. An inch and a half would be perfect. So you've got about a half-inch circle, an inch circle, and an inch and a half or so circle. Last bit of drawing. Go down a couple of inches, and you're going to draw a ladder with nine steps. So you would make a vertical line, and about an inch to the right or left, you'd make another vertical line, and now connect them with horizontal lines. So you have a total of nine equidistant horizontal lines. And it should look like a ladder that somebody could put against a wall and climb. You'd have to be mighty small, but you got the point, right? It looks like a ladder, two vertical lines, nine connecting horizontal lines. We'll come back to these later. Anybody stressed over, I didn't understand it, or something's wrong with me, I can't draw, add those to the other piece of paper off to the side. Those are lies. I'm going to cover the main points right up front, kind of as a foundation. Main point number one, we can redefine anything we want. We can redefine anything we want. Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, our past, our present situation, the future that we expect, traumas we've experienced, abuse, failure, tragedy, pain. We can redefine it. This actually is how the Healing Codes makes its impact. In the body, it helps redefine the stressful cellular memories, those experiences, those pictures, those interpretations, brings them into a new light, a new level of awareness in present time, and it redefines them. Main point number two. Part of us, the primitive part, wants us to view everything in terms of threats to our survival. Everything in terms of threats to our survival. It's a good thing because this attitude of scanning our environment looking for threats is what has kept us from becoming extinct. We search the environment and go, oh, I got to stay alive. I got to stay alive. What can hurt me? What can kill me? What can make me lunch? It does all of that. That's a great thing in certain circumstances. That part of us wants to protect us from pain and hurt. It wants to keep us alive. When the possibility of pain is perceived, two choices seem to pop up. You've heard about this before. Fight or flight. When pain is perceived, or the possibility of it is perceived, fight or flight occurs. Two choices. Pretty limited choice. Other words to describe that, fight or flight, we've heard them so many times they sort of bounce off our heads, but attack, run away, resist, surrender, criticize, ignore, on and on and on. There are a lot of different ways to describe the same impulse. Flight, bury our head in the sand. So you can get the feel for that. Fight, in terms of the Christmas or holiday season, is the same as being grouchy, mean, angry, frustrated. Flight is avoiding, numbing ourselves. That's alcohol and the foods that become really, really popular this time of the year, and basically running away, ignoring things. Both fight and flight are based upon fear. The first ingredient is fear, and out of that comes fight or flight. In some situations, this is a good approach, but not most of them. Christmas time is not dangerous, but a lot of people perceive it as dangerous. The reason is, because of all the memories, all their experiences, everything else that they've got in their background that gets activated at this time of the year makes us think that this is dangerous. Here's the point. There's a third choice. Fight is one choice. Flight is another. I call the third one embrace-allow. Embrace, E-M-B-R-A-C-E, hyphen, allow, A-L-L-O-W. The idea that we don't have to attack or run away, but in fact can stand there and observe, is in fact part of the process of doing the healing codes. When you are doing the codes and you're observing situations or a thought pops up, and the first impulse is to hyperventilate or some other experience of stress, you go, whoa, wait a minute, I'm just going to observe this. That is the embrace, allow. It is a lie to think that our happiness comes from controlling outside circumstances or other people. We're not going to succeed at that. For those of us who have children, we know controlling kids, if that's what your happiness is based upon, you got a long struggle ahead of you. That's not where it's at. The third main point, translation of inputs into other forms is a key idea. Translation. That's all you'd have to write down if you're a note taker. Translation. Let me explain it this way. When we eat a sandwich, the cells in our bodies are not going like this. Oh, goody, goody, goody. Oh, here comes that chicken salad. That's not what happens. That sandwich, that chicken salad, needs to be translated into a usable energy form. We call that process digestion. Now, some people think that sandwich is translated into chemicals, and the cells go, oh, goody, 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 here comes some chemicals. That's not true. That digestion continues because the body continues to translate into a usable energy form, a frequency, a vibration that the cells can use. That's what we're talking about. However, we take in energy all day long. We translate things all day long. Not just a sandwich, not just a beverage. We take in the energy of our thoughts, our feelings, the things we see, the things we hear, the things we physically sense with our touch. I had an experience recently. They had a special on HBO, which is a cable television network. I don't know if that's all around the world. I've seen it in Europe, but I don't know about Australia. HBO had a special on Rome. It was tremendously graphic. I found it interesting, but I noticed when I watched the series, I lasted about four of the series, every time I was done, I felt terrible physically and emotionally. I felt discouraged, depressed. I thought, wow, what's going on? And after about the fourth episode, I realized it was what I was taking in and translating. That series was graphic. It only showed the worst behaviors, the worst characteristics of humankind. It was awful. And if you take in that energy, there's no way you could feel good about it. If you want a diet of poison, this is what I would recommend to you. Take equal doses of the 6 o'clock news, newspapers filled with stories of death and destruction and all the awful things that man is doing to man, what storms are doing to people. Listen to gossip. You get the point. That energy is harmful. We translate that into not good stuff, so we need to be aware of that. The fourth point, we translate based upon our emotional state. I'm going to describe the emotional state in a couple of different ways. One is how we see ourselves in relation to other people and things, and how our view of the world changes based upon how we're feeling at that moment. I'd like you to flip back to the three circles, the one, the small circle, the medium-sized circle, and the larger of the circle. And I'm going to describe those. This is a model of a relationship that I find helpful and that I've noticed that clients find helpful. It's called little circle, big circle, and equal circle. The little circle is the smaller of the circles. The big circle is the medium size. And the equal circle is the biggest of those circles. I know you're scratching your head and go, add that to your first sheet of paper. But let me describe that a little bit. When we're first born, we're little, and we're laying in the crib or wherever, our first perception that we're different than other people occurs about then. We notice that we are little relative to them. And some conclusions are starting to be formed, one of which is, I'm little, they're big. If my needs are going to be met, they, those people out there, those big people, those powerful people, those strong people, those people with the control, have got to meet my needs. I cannot meet my own needs. Already an era in judgment has started. That's the little circle. I abbreviate it LC, little circle. The next, and most people are familiar with this, it either is the terrible twos or terrible threes or adolescence. Sometimes those things are indistinguishable. The big circle is when a person fully misunderstands and concludes this, aha, I got it, I understand the rule. The purpose of this game is either they're in control or I'm in control. This is a battle for control. And those of us who've been teenagers or have had teenagers know this. That is a very rebellious, opposed to everything, no, not going to do it kind of place. Refuse to do it. A big circle basically doesn't have any point of view except they're opposed to yours. If you say it's a nice day, they're going to say, no, it's not. You know, somebody's going to get sunburned today. If it's any other weather, nope, there's always a downside to it. So that's a very rebellious attitude. They won't agree with you because if I agree with you, you're going to have control. I know the battle is for control. Not true. At some point, somebody's going to introduce respect into this equation, and that's when you get the big circle, the really, really big circle, which is equal. And it's based upon this idea that when you recognize that people are different, separate, but equal in a fundamental way, even though the teenager is not going to be allowed the car, they are equal as a person, they have feelings, and respect starts to occur, and they start to go, you know what, my parent might actually know something, maybe I'll just listen since they've listened to me for a change. And now all of a sudden, what happens is that equal circle is larger for this reason. Those first two circles, the little circle and the big circle, are based upon fear and isolation and all by yourself kind of thing. Those people don't have access to anybody's energy. The little circle is, oh, I can't, I'm a victim, I'm too little, I can't do it by myself, oh my, oh my, oh my. The big circle is, oh, that's lousy, I don't want that, I don't need that, that's no good, that's not important, I refuse to go along with that, no way, no way. They don't have access to other people. The equal circle can enroll people in helping them. So they're the largest of those circles. You have resources of multiple people because you can enroll them in helping with a particular issue. You can literally feel with a little bit of practice when you go into the little circle. If somebody were to say, I need you to do this, if you feel contraction, get it? That's like going into the little circle. If you feel, I'm not going to do that, that's stupid, that's ridiculous, I don't know what, that's big circle. If the equal circle is, I wonder how I could do this, and you ask questions or if you get clarification and go, well, you know, I'll give it a shot. I think maybe I can develop the skill necessary to do this job or get enough information, I'll know how best to do it, that's the equal circle. That's what we're looking for. You can see the correlation between flight, little circle, fight, big circle, embrace, allow, equal circle. Pretty clear right there. So when you feel yourself going into any one of those circles, just being aware of it can go, oh, I got what's going on. And then you can shift. It makes it so much easier just by that awareness. Let me go to the other diagram of the ladder. This comes from the Sedona method. They use a 9-step or a 9-level emotional state. There are other more elaborate, more complete emotional states. The tone scale is one of them. The map of consciousness from David Hawkins is another. This is nice and simple and straightforward. If you want to label the bottom rung of the ladder as A for apathy, the one above that is G for grief. The one above that is fear, F, fear. Above that, L, lust. Lust is not just a sexual thing, it's a craving, it's addictions, gotta have it, gotta have it, gotta have it kind of belief system. Above that is anger, A for anger. Above that, P for pride. And I'll do the other three in a second. So, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, and pride. Now, it makes sense, right? If we had a ladder, standing on the first rung of the ladder, my view of the world is different than if I were on a higher rung of the ladder. Apathy is, it's a hopeless kind of view. What's the use? As you climb up, there's sadness based upon loss. Things not done, things done. Above that, fear. Above that, lust. Above that, anger. Each step above is an improvement on the one below. It's greater chance for the movement of energy. And above anger is pride. And you can hear pride being marketed in the United States to the Marine Corps. The pride of a few, Army of One in the U.S. Army. All of this is designed to appeal to pride. The top three are courageousness, acceptance, and peace. You literally will be able to tell with a little bit of practice which rung of the ladder you are on. Now I can turn around and say to you, let's talk about the little circle and the big circle. When I mention Christmas, Christmas time, holidays, you will be in one of those three circles. When I say Christmas time, Christmas holidays, you will be on one of those rungs of the ladder. Now, depending on how your mind works, if you think of a specific, you could jump up to courageousness, oh, good, this is going to be great, and then a minute later think of something else and plummet down to some other grief, right, disappointment, that sort of thing. Let's go back to the fifth point now. This is a new point. Everything we do, everything other people do, is because we think it will make us feel better. Everything we do, everything other people do, is because we think it will make us feel better. Now, what does that mean? That means if it's true, all we have to do is get better at choosing the things we do. And if we choose things that actually do make us happier, not sadder, happier, that is a good step. That is a growth in our awareness and a reduction in stress as we become happier. You can see, oh, as you become happier, you start climbing that ladder. As you become happier, you start to move out of those two circles and into the equal circle. And as we remove fight or flight response, that impulse, those fears, those stresses, it gets easier to move up the ladder or into the equal circle. The sixth main point, the healing codes helps us do all of those points. That's really, really good news. I'm going to give you a little bit of background. Let's talk about this. Depending on your age, you are possibly the parent of a baby boomer or a baby boomer. In the U.S., those are baby boomers or post-World War II generation, the parents of those, or you're the child of a baby boomer. That would put you in your 20s, 30s, possibly close to 40. Just think of this. The parents of the baby boomers were the first group in the United States and possibly everywhere else on the planet to really be exposed to the tremendous advertising pressure to buy, 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 whether you could afford it or not, buy, buy, buy. Those same parents of the baby boomers had experienced the Great Depression. How's that for a conflict? Buy, buy, buy. And you also have memories of the world coming to an end economically, people jumping off the roofs of buildings out of despair, committing suicide because all of a sudden they're broke. There's some conflict. Our parents weren't used to that kind of pressure. When they had us, genetically, ancestrally, that stuff is transmitted in some level, some forms, those pictures. So here they are, post-World War II. They're now producing, well, certainly in my parents, they were producing kids at a rapid rate and trying to produce the money, the means to support them. The pictures and the anxieties that our parents had from the Depression, from the war years, and now this advertising pressure, all combined to scare them, to cause them to battle. All of that is transmitted to us as children. Those pictures, those interpretations are basically filled with programming statements. If I were talking to optometrists and I would be speaking about picking up lenses of various colors, putting them into glasses, and then going, oh, wow, look, the world has a certain tint to it. And you can see how that can occur. Pictures, these events, these experiences, these vibrations, reviewed and reviewed and reviewed, reinforced, activated, reactivated, reactivated, become the memories and the cellular memories that we're still trying to deal with. When we have these memories from our childhood and they get reactivated in Christmas time, for a lot of us, they're indistinguishable from present-day circumstances. We get short, we get angry, we get tense, and we think it's happening today. And in fact, what's happened is our anxieties when we were five-year-old children are getting reactivated, and those anxieties weren't ours to start with. They were our parents, and they're getting reactivated, and they may have even been their parents, and they're reactivated. So all of this stuff is going on. We're receiving the broadcast, bye, 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 look out, world coming to an end, hurricanes, tsunamis, all the rest of this war, terrorism. We don't know what to do. It's very easy in these circumstances to have associated pain, embarrassment, disappointment, fear with the Christmas holiday season. I'm going to talk about specific stresses. We'll start with number one of the 12. These are my sequence. Are they the right sequence? I don't know. But since I know where the mute button is, I can make my own rules here. Stress number one is a composite of all the Christmases before are right here, right now, in each one of us. We bring in our own personal memories, beliefs, experiences, the energy from our parents, our older siblings, and so on and so on and so on. The disappointments we may have felt, the disappointments we heard about, the disappointments that our parents expressed, the fears, we bring them all into this year. So the stuff that as we stand on the street corner and go, whoa, I'm anxious, some of that is not ours. It's hard to distinguish what is ours from theirs, but it's not necessarily ours. Be aware of that. So what are we afraid of? Our needs won't be met. We won't live through it. We can't do what we want. We aren't useful to our families. We won't be loved by our friends and families if we don't behave in a certain way. We're afraid to be criticized. Oh, we didn't get as many presents as the Joneses, the next-door neighbors. All of that stuff is going on, and you can see how that stuff can drive a person into the little circle or the big circle or down that emotional state ladder that I described. Nobody really knows what kind of energy the ancestors bring into this, but I would say everybody on this call, there may be one or two exceptions, are of immigrant stock. My two grandmothers were born in Europe. They were immigrants. So let me see if I can describe a possible situation. There they are, one in Ireland, one in Germany, going, you know what? I'm so successful. Things are so great here. I pretty much have everything I want. There are no challenges to my life. You know, life is so good, it's starting to get boring. I need a new challenge. What I'm going to do is I'm going to jump on a boat, try to make it across the Atlantic Ocean, and see if I can survive that trip, go to a new land with no home, no friends, no family, no work. And, you know, this really sounds like it's a lot of fun. I'm up for that. You know what? I don't think that's how it was. I don't think that's how it was. I think they must have had tremendous fear and anxiety as they're making that trip. Did they pass it on? I think they have to. One of my grandmothers was Irish. She learned to read in a cave because it was against the law for Irish children to learn how to read. This shows you how memories and energy can be transmitted. She died 9 years before I was born. When I was a little kid, I was angry at the British. Hello, I couldn't even spell British. What sense does it make for a kid to be angry at a nationality he can't even spell, doesn't know what it is? That's transmitted to my grandmother, to my father, to me, I presume to my siblings. But let's go back to the uprooted immigrant stock that we came from. You think they had some anger at not being able to stay with their family and friends in their home countries? Resentment, the way things worked out? I would think so. I would think so. They had to be tremendously courageous to do what they did. They had to be scared out of their wits. And I think some of that stuff can still be with us. We have Australians on the line. Let me just say this. My first male relative that I can find took a boat from Ireland to Liverpool. From Liverpool, he sailed in about 1850. That must have been a nice cruise line. To Melbourne. He must have liked it so much he decided he wanted to go on another cruise, and so he cruised to New York. I don't know if he went directly or he had a few stops on the way. I can't even imagine what that's like. To show you how reasonable I am, the other day I was in an airport and I was complaining I had to stand in line to get a Starbucks cup of coffee. I bet my great-great-great-grandfather would have been really proud of me. Hello. He would have been whacking me in the head. The difficulties they endured stay with us. I think we need to give ourselves a break for some of this anxiety. Stress number two is giving away our power to others. The bombardment of advertising to spend relentlessly, to buy relentlessly, is an all-out assault on our common sense. They use guilt, they use promises, they use lures, they use traps. They tell us we deserve to go in debt. Hello, that doesn't seem all that appealing. Marketers are tipping the playing field, convincing us that we should be measuring ourselves by gift. I call this measurement by gift. The more you can spend, the more you can buy, the more things you can go into debt over, the cooler you will be in the ideas of a credit card company. Trouble is, it's not true. The idea that the number, the size, the prices of gifts, gifts of value, is a lie. People give those gifts and then get the psychic energy from being able to talk about it. Of course, many times they're squirming because they know the bills are coming due in some days. That trap of giving power away to these people to determine what we need to buy, how much we need to buy, and on and on and on, when this thought, and if you guys didn't go into the little circle on this topic, if I don't overextend myself, that's a little circle. And if you get angry about it, that's big circle. We use other people's rules to limit ourselves. What we can have, what we can be, what we can do. Advertising agencies, marketers, credit card companies tell us how to celebrate the holidays. Go out there, stand in line, gouge the people in front of you, knock them down to get the thing you want. They want us to use their rules. You know why? Because it benefits them. It doesn't benefit us. It benefits them. Not for our good, for their good. It's stressful giving somebody control over our own behavior. Stress number three, who gets to define Christmas? You know, I talked earlier about redefining. Who gets to define Christmas? Oh, well, we always do it this way. We always go up to hock to our eyeballs. Doesn't have to be that way. We've accumulated a lot of shoulds, have-tos, what to do, what not to do. We got all kinds of pressure. Kids and grandkids and spouses see ads on TV. Oh, if you really love her, you'll buy her that De Beers diamond. If you really love that kid, you'll buy him that newest gadget or whatever. The one that they'll look at for about 15 minutes and throw down and go on to the next thing. Just consider the prejudices we've learned in our lives. Prejudices are basically ignorant rules that other people have developed and found it a lot easier than thinking. And they pass them on. Those prejudices can be about race, nationality, ethnic background, age, religion, language, on and on. Somebody unthinkingly made a rule, transmitted it to us, and we took it in. The same kind of prejudices and rules about Christmas have been transmitted to us. We took them in. Even unspoken feelings, people standing in line or thinking about Christmas, transmitted to us, we take them in. We can redefine those rules. Redefine, redefine. We have that power. We get to make those rules. I like this. When next time you get angry at somebody or something, or even yourself, see if you just violated one of your own rules. The next time you go into the little circle, see if you're afraid of being caught violating somebody's rule. Now, see if you've experienced this. You're driving down the road, you know, listening to the music, doing whatever you're doing, not paying much attention. All of a sudden, you look up, and there is a police car right behind you. That feeling in your stomach, uh-oh, is that contraction. Oh, my, did I just get caught breaking a rule? Am I going to be? That's the little circle. We make the rules. There are some societal rules that we should obey. I have two rules that I obey. Gravity, slow a traffic, move right. Everything else is a free-for-all. Those are the two I like most. Stress number four is when we believe that there is no work in making Christmas happy. Hello, reality check. There is work in making Christmas happy. It takes work to create a happy Christmas, or a happy anything else for that matter. Misbelieving that there's no work in the process of Christmas sets you up for a serious bump on the head. It does take work. It takes paying attention. It takes some certain actions. It takes some certain thoughts. To be good at anything takes a little bit of practice. Why wouldn't making a good Christmas take some practice? There are all kinds of stresses around us. Other shoppers, people in similar circumstances, advertising pressures, increasing expectations of yourself. That's almost like a tidal wave. I won't say tsunami, but I don't want to minimize what has occurred on the other side of the world. But it's like a huge wave of energy trying to sweep us in a certain direction. It's work swimming against that tide. Stress number five. Worrying about paying for the expenditures when the bills come in January. When we begin activating pictures of not enoughness, and frankly, this phrase, not enough, capital N, capital E, to me is one of the great, great lies that most of us experience. It reads like this, I am not blank enough. So there's a blank space in between not and enough. Tall enough, smart enough, rich enough, handsome enough, pretty enough, thin enough, heavy enough, educated enough, kind enough, good enough, on and on and on and on and on and on and on. Lie, 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 lie. When we activate pictures of not enoughness about money or time, we go into stress. First reaction, we go into fear, go into the little circle, and if we don't like it there, we bounce up to the big circle, and then we're like a ping pong ball. Little circle, big circle, I'm in fear, I'm angry, I'm afraid, I'm angry, I'm afraid, I'm angry. The problem is believing in scarcity. Just look around at the reality every day. Even now on this conference call, we're using a relatively new technology that people are making millions of dollars from, selling it to people who are using it for a variety of reasons. New wealth is created every day with inventions and technologies. The solution to financial worries is create more wealth. Create it. Create it. The solution is not to spend less, although that may be a good thing to do as you concentrate on creating more. The solution is not to ask for lower prices. Just think, follow this sequence. Lower prices means that people will have less incentive to produce. Less incentive to produce means there will be fewer products and services to buy and sell, which means our standard of living will be lower, and pretty soon, that's not a good idea. Increase the willingness and your ability to attract and create wealth and value. Now, I do agree that spending money on trinkets and stuff that's going to end up in a garbage or a landfill is kind of senseless, especially to the degree which we do it here in the U.S. I think we should be focusing on self-development, growing our awareness, our spiritual connection, our health, our physical abilities, our mental abilities, our intellectual abilities. That makes a lot of sense. Stress number six, regretting what we did and didn't do. what we should have done and what we shouldn't have done. This is where the overeating, drinking to excess, misbehavior, the proverbial Christmas parties all come in. Worrying about that before or worrying about it afterwards is a huge stressor. Overeating, overdrinking is a mood-altering activity designed to suppress the anxiety that people are feeling. It's not a good activity because now there's a physical bad feelings that are added to this. Stress number 7, family relationships. I have these linked. They're not necessarily connected. Family relationships or buying gifts for people we don't even like. Now, the word family, if you need to write something on that single sheet of paper off to the side, this is a good time. But pictures of family, disappointments and other things from that ladder, if you will, can be reactivated. Those are great to heal. We'll talk about that more in a few minutes. Looking at your relationships, you can go into anger, you can go into fear, you can go into pride. I make more than he makes or she makes, or, oh, man, I hope they don't show me up again, that sort of thing. You'll want to handle those. Oftentimes at this point in the year, the idea of grudges come up. My wife and I heard this point brought up in a Sunday sermon a couple of years ago. It had to do with holding grudges. I'm just going to summarize it and say, here's the lie. Holding a grudge hurts the other person. That's a lie. Lie, 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 lie. Here's the truth. Holding a grudge makes me a prisoner. That's true. As your awareness increases, you'll go, you know what? That doesn't feel good to feel that way about so-and-so. We can deal with that stress. We can let that stress go. Stress number 8. Misunderstanding what we can want, have, and where it comes from. Can't afford, I can't afford, I can't afford. That's a habit, and you're going to want to let go of it. You'll want to be able to afford, afford, afford. Whether you buy or not is a whole different set of circumstances. That's a whole other decision-making process. I know for a fact, personally, that I can afford anything I really, really want. And people said, no, no, that's not true. That's not true. I can't afford it. I said, okay, how about this? Somebody pulls up in front of your house with a Mercedes-Benz and says, my spouse hates the car. I can't go home with it. Give me a couple of $1,000. It's yours. Here's the title. Oh, really, it sounds weird. Take it. You know what? That couple of $1,000 would manifest pretty, pretty quickly. We would be able to afford it. All of a sudden, you go, you betcha. Hold on. So that ability to be able to afford what we want is crucial. There's another issue about this. There's a difference between having and having. Have you ever gone window shopping and looked through the window of a jewelry store for the women and a hardware store or a computer store for us guys? We press our nose against the window, and you can just look at that stuff, just look at that stuff and go, oh, wow. That is really cool. Or you get in your car and you drive around the neighborhood and look at Christmas lights. Go, wow, that's beautiful. Or you look at a storefront that's beautifully decorated. That's having. That's taking in that energy. That is translating the energy of that beauty and what it represents and making yourself feel good with it. That's having. That's not the same thing as owning. That's not the same thing as taking it home and putting it in your closet, on a shelf in your office. That's a different form of having. I'm a great believer in wanting. Wanting. Some people say, oh, want, want, that says lack. Not to me, it doesn't. I want a glass of water. I know that's the first step in me getting a glass of water. I want it. Now, energy will come into play to create this. It summons the life force. I can recall years ago sitting in a coffee shop on Broadway in Manhattan, about 86th or 7th Street, and I watched a little girl and her mother come through the door and look at this beautiful case of pastries, and I saw them before they got there, and I thought it was going to be a huge management problem for that woman. And they walked through the door, and the mother said to the little girl, honey, what would you like? She said, I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. And anything else, honey? Yeah, I want one of those and one of those. She said, okay, dear, let's go. The mother took the daughter by the hand and they bounced out of that and never fought a single thing. I didn't understand what happened, but I knew that was monumental. Years later, I was trying to lose a few pounds. I'm still trying to lose those same few pounds. And one day I said, well, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't want the chocolate that is in the refrigerator. Well, 15 minutes later, get this visual. 15 minutes later, I was like a creature, a zombie from the Night of the Living Dead, although this was the afternoon of the Living Dead, gorging on chocolate, totally out of control, couldn't stop myself, and part of me is watching him going, oh, this is weird. 15 minutes later, I go back into the office, you know, still drooling, and I went, wow, that was strange. Next day, same scenario, walk into the kitchen and go, I do want the chocolate. I want it. Yeah, I want it. I want that chocolate. I want the maple syrup. I want all the sweets in the house. And when I'm done with those sweets, I want to get in the car, drive to the grocery store a mile away, start on the cookie aisle and eat every single cookie. And I went through that for about 30 seconds until I burst out laughing, and I went back to the office. Never touched a calorie. And I went, wow. We want to want. Allow yourself to want. It's creative. It's powerful. You set up all kinds of forces when you refuse to want. You stop your wanting. Stress 9. There's a low chance of being right and a high risk of being wrong. Oh, you know, I don't know the right size. It's wrong. Buy stuff that can be taken back. The person that you give a gift to will get your intention if your intention is to love them, show them appreciation, to be kind, as compared to your intention trying to improve their wardrobe. If your intention is right, most people can get that. Focus on your intention. Stress, number 10, conflicting needs. Stress is when needs are in conflict. This is when I need to pay the mortgage, I need to buy the presents, I need to go shopping, I need to go to work, I need to do this, I need to do that. That's a juggling act. One of those will take supremacy, and better it should do it rationally as you do the healing codes, but you're going to feel those pressures, and part of you will go into the little circle, and then you'll bounce with it, get angry, and go into the big circle, go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You're going to be able to shift that. Number 11. Now, nobody will be at all familiar with this concept, so brace yourself. Procrastination. Procrastination is the flight in the fight or flight. That's how we respond. Oh, I think I'll put this off until the 24th. Now, I can't be the only one on this call that on December 24th shopping going, oh, this is not so painful. Wow, why did I wait to the last minute? This wasn't the monster that I made it out to be. Next year, I think I really need to tune into it a little bit earlier. Next year on the 24th, oh, wow, why did I do that? When we perceive threats, avoiding them is sometimes a good strategy. It is not politically correct to beat up Santa Claus, so procrastinating is more common. Very few people say, you know what? I feel much better for having procrastinated. I think I'm going to make this a standard pattern. On the other hand, we spend so much energy thinking and going back and forth, going back and forth. That procrastination really burns us out. That's a real challenge. Stress number 12, and in fact, this could be the main one. I'll let you decide. And that is the sense of disconnection from all that is. From God, from the Creator, from the Maker, from the Spirit, from the purpose of these holidays, the sense of disconnection. We've been tricked into believing that Christmas is about presents. No, it's not. No, it's not. We can redefine it anywhere, anyhow, any way we want. Originally, it was about a birth of Jesus. A new life, a new model of relationships, a new way of living, a new indication of the power that people have. For you that are Christians or biblically oriented, you can find a lot of references to his power, what can be done, and just like him, we can do it kind of thing. That's not what's peddled this time of the year. Hanukkah had to do with the reopening of the temple for higher worship, allowing for that reconnection to all that is. Kwanzaa, a newer holiday, is based upon seven concepts having to do with self-empowerment, personal value, sense of community, interconnectedness of us all. That's what this holiday season is about. Not standing in a line, freaking out over credit card debt. Okay, baker's dozen. Here's 13. Stress number 13. We get what we focus on. This is double-edged. It's magical if we focus on what we like and what we want. It's bad news if we focus on what we don't like and don't want. One way or another, we're going to get what we focus on. So, if we're going, oh, I hate this. So this is what I say. If you were to just quickly calculate two numbers, the number of times you said, I dislike or hate this holiday, versus the number of times you go, I love this holiday, I like this holiday. Just quickly calculate those and put them on that piece of paper and go, ooh, if you got more loves and likes than the others, fantastic. That's fantastic. You are likely to attract more of those loves and likes. When we focus on what we don't want, we lose the vision. Let's go back to that horizontal line with the two squares, one on either end. There we are, standing on that line, and we're progressing from the past to the future, from what we didn't want to what we do want, from less happiness to more happiness, from less money to more money, from less health to more health, to less good relationships to better relationships. That box on the right-hand edge can be any positive thing that you want. Your day-to-day activities, as you find yourself focusing on that versus the other, you will know you are progressing on that line toward what you want. So, 13 stresses of holidays, of the Christmas and other holidays. What can we do about it? I already talked about redefining Christmas. Translate Christmas, your holiday, into things that make you happy. You can. You can translate it in ways that make you happy. You have the power, the right, the responsibility, the need, the authority to choose what Christmas means to you. Right now we're operating on what it means to marketers, credit card companies, maybe our families of origins or their families of origins. Decide for yourself. If you were to sit down and say, a happy Christmas, and you wrote out the characteristics, literally made a list of that, the way you would design a truth focus statement, you would be amazed. At first you go, you'll want to do that. If you have children, you can lead them away from the trap that more is more. Encourage your children, yourselves, to go through your clothing, your toys, your tools in the next week or so and say to kids, now, you could say this to children, look, I'm thinking Santa Claus is coming, and if Santa Claus is coming, you need to make room for this, and you also need to give toys back to the elves so they can redistribute them. They'll fix them up, polish them, paint them, do whatever they need to do. Let's clean out those that you want to give so other children can have toys as well. All of a sudden, it's not about gimme, 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 I want. It's let me give, let me share. A whole new definition or an aspect of Christmas that you will do well to share with other people. And if no kids are at home, or that's not your family, the clothing that you have can serve somebody. Not everybody is worried about tan lines on their feet because of their sandals like I am in Florida. Some people are going, it is mighty chilly. It's snowing in places where you are tonight. So your clothing delivered to a Goodwill or a Salvation Army or some other organization in your city or country is a tremendous way to do that. Explain to kids what Christmas, what these holidays are really about. Two, what we can do about it. Give caring. Recognize that when we give gifts, physical objects, they're really representation of our love, our caring, our affection, our respect, of our admiration. They are not love, caring, respect, admiration. They're representations of it. They're substitutes. They're imitations. I'm thinking that our loved ones probably don't need as many toys as they need care and attention. I love the definition of love. Attention, focusing your attention on a person. Respect, as you do that, you don't need to change them. You're willing to notice them exactly the way they are. And appreciation, you see the good in them as they are. That, if you gave that as a gift, you'd have some happy people surrounding you. Give more love as your gifts. There's a physical object that I got in this last week that bears mention. My younger sister, she's number 6 out of 7 children. We saw her in Arizona. She came to meet us, and she brought a box, kind of like a cigar box, but it wasn't. It was a bought box that she decorated with pictures of me and my family of origin from my childhood. Now, from a monetary standpoint, I think it probably didn't cost Anne all that much. It cost her some time, some effort, some creativity, but it is fantastic. You know what? She gave me a gift that is going to be with me for the rest of my life. Now, if you turn around and say to somebody, the gift I'm about to give you is, it may last 15 minutes, and then it'll be discarded, won't be noticed, won't be valued, has no energy component at all to it. Gift caring. Take your children window shopping. Take your friends window shopping. Take your loved ones window shopping. You can have without buying. It would be good for kids to learn that. I was on a plane recently, a different trip, and a fellow passenger said he was on his way to visit his dying mother. He didn't know what to do for her or give to her. Have you ever thought of making a list of all the loving, kind, considerate things she has done for you and then read them to her one at a time? When he answered me in about 8 minutes later, after we had gone through a plane load of tissues, he said, no, I hadn't, but I will now. I would think that's a great gift. You could do it. It doesn't have to be to a dying person. It could be to a kid, a friend, a loved one. Make a list of all the people that are important to you and just recite why they're important to you, how kind they've been to you. Give forgiveness, ask for forgiveness, give admiration. 3, give gifts that make life more comprehensible, manageable, and meaningful. Give gifts that will increase their awareness. That is so important. Instead of giving stuff to children, we have a grandson that visited us a month ago. He was fantastic the entire weekend until he whipped out one of these little electronic games. It was frightening. It ate his mind. I could have taken that game apart. I'm certain I would have downed his brain inside of that. Those things are definitely off limit. I wouldn't give one of those to a child. Give him something that will make him more able to function in the world. There's definitely a difference between gift giving and thing giving. If you gave a gift that would help a person move up that ladder, or move out of the little circle, or move out of the big circle into the equal circle, that would be an incredible gift. I would say decide on a budget. That's number 4. No gifts over X number of dollars. The total can't be over Y number of dollars. Gifts have to be something other than store-bought. They have to be made by hand. They have to be whatever. You could clip pictures from a magazine, put them in a box, and hand them to your loved one and said, if I had all the money in the world, these are the things I would buy for you. If I had all the money in the world, these are the places I would take you on the planet. 5. Go to places where gifts are. I've heard people say, I can't find anything. I say, yeah? What store did you go in? I didn't actually go in any stores yet. Oh, what catalog? No catalog. Online? I don't have a computer. It's very difficult to find a gift if you don't create it, find it, or go look for it somewhere. Hiding in the closet with your head buried under the shoes is not the way. You got to go out. This is something you can literally go into a department store, a mall, and just walk around with the intention not to buy, just to sightsee. If you can do that with catalogs, that's a great thing to do. But put yourself in a position. Just get started. Practice what you want. If you want to play the guitar, you would practice, right? If you wanted to play football, and I know that's different from every country that we're talking about here, but you would practice. If you want to be happy, why practice complaining, criticizing, and beating ourselves up? That doesn't make sense. Practice, practice. Go back to that horizontal line with the boxes on. If you want to be happy, you have to practice. You have to focus on it. One little step, one little thought, one little feeling, one little belief at a time. Practice being happy. 6, gratitude is a great way to tune ourselves. If you go back to this circle with the stick figure in it, inside that circle, at randomly, place 4 plus signs and 4 minus signs. That represents your current experiences. Some things you have that you like, some things that you have that you don't like. On the outside of that circle, let's put 4 or 5 plus signs anywhere you want, 4 or 5 minus signs anywhere you want. Inside of that circle represents the things you're familiar with, the things you have, your comfort zone. That line represents an energy pattern that keeps you in and keeps unknown, scary, different, new things out. It's a whole series of energy patterns. I'll call it a comfort line. If you look at one of those plus signs on the outside of the circle and you put a dollar sign or any sign that represents money in your country, the way to get that plus money sign into your circle is through gratitude. That line, that wall, that energy pattern that's protecting you, in quotes, and imprisoning you, in quotes, gets thicker and thicker as you're afraid, gets thinner and thinner as you're safe. As you focus on that money with gratitude, the shield goes down in that section of the wall, and it allows the money to be attracted to you. It makes you more magnetic. That is a great way. You can use a truth focus statement and do the same thing and recognize as you look at that and you come out of the little circle, oh, I can never get it. I can't get this money. Or, I don't need no stinking money. Big circle. When you come out of those and go, you know what? Money is pretty handy on this here planet. I want more. I'll use it to achieve other things. Okay, I'm open to it. Then you go into the inner circle, you can attract it. And now, 7, start now. Start now. Start now. Starting is the hardest part of anything. Start with a list. List of somebody you want to buy a gift for. Start with a budget. Write it down. A budget per person. What they would like. What they would need. What's important to them. What you want to get. How you're going to express your affection. Take that little teeny action and you'll have the ball rolling. You'll have momentum. It'll be in place. All you do is start. If you can start, everything becomes easier after that first impulse of moving. It is the most difficult thing. Walk into a store. Take a piece of paper. Just wander. It's amazing. Start. And maybe the most important one of this is number 8 on my list, and the final one, intend to like Christmas. Decide to like Christmas. Decide you want to be happy. Decide you're going to be happy. Decide you're going to do it. And so when you feel yourself looking in the wrong direction on that horizontal line, go, oh, I just caught myself. Oh, thanks. And turn and face in the other direction on what you like and what you want. It is that intention will carry the day, it'll start the flow of energy, and you just keep intending, intending, intending. And you will attract the resources. Somebody will say to you, oh, you know what I would love? Oh, you know where you can get that? Oh, and it becomes easier and easier. It's as if the universe will conspire once you decide on what your intention is. intention is. Like Santa has his little elves, well, there are universal energy patterns, if you will, that you can attract to make it easier in order for you to fulfill your aspirations for a happy Christmas, a happy holiday, or if you focus in the other direction, problems, more of the same, more stress. And you could look at your list, if you've added anything to those, or if your stomach tightened, or you were upset or bothered or annoyed by anything that I said or didn't say, add those to the list of things that you'll want to observe as you do the healing codes. We have what we believe to be the ultimate tool for redefinition, redefining present-day experiences, redefining the past experiences, redefining cellular memories, even those that we've inherited, as well as redefining the future. We can blueprint and create the future we want as we take some of the steps that I talked about and those you already know and use them as you do the healing codes. I think that Happy Holidays won't be just a song, won't be just a myth, won't be just something the other people experience, but in fact will be a reality for you and you and you and me and us and all of us. And as we do it, we become models of it for other people, and it starts rippling out to our interconnectedness. So all of us are starting to express the same things that were promised when these holidays originated, when Jesus was born, when the temple was opened, when Kwanzaa was created. We start it anew. We share it with those that we love. It'll be happy for us, happy for them, happy for our communities.